Congratulations. You've made an excellent life choice today. You're displaying strong character and good taste in tuning into this infotainment web zone. We're poorly informed, highly opinionated, and hold no topic off limits. This is Idiots Discuss the Universe. We've got a really special episode, and we've got a couple guest hosts in the studio today. I'd like everybody to welcome Steven.
Hello.
And Juan.
How's it going?
And they're in here taking the place of Spencer, who's out being a rock star and couldn't get back from Seattle in time from his big show, which I hear went really well, but we'll find out more about that when he gets back into town later on tonight or tomorrow, whenever he rolls into town. Who knows what that guy's going to do? He could be dead on the side of the road for all we know. We're going to be talking about a great topic, kind of this one that's kind of been blowing my mind as I've been doing research on it. And I've been hearing a little bit of, you know, rumblings. You know, I mean, I feel like this is up and coming part of healthcare right now, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You know, so you hear like little hints and stuff about this. I remember people were urging me to eat like fully fermented foods a few years ago, and I didn't really know what was going on. I was super sick, but they're like, oh, eat some fermented food. So I did that. I don't know what it did, but you know, I did that for a while, you know, and I think I'm going to do it again now that I've done this research. But we're going to be talking about the gut biome. Just kind of some of the things that we've learned as a culture as far as what we think that it does, what kind of impact it has on us, like what kind of impact it's had on history and like the future. And you know, I mean, it's huge. If what we think is true about it is true about it, it's one of the greatest medical discoveries of our lifetime, you know. And there's still so much that we don't understand yet, but I think that it's, you know, it's going to be fascinating. But before we get into that, I want to desperately plead with everybody to get on that internet and find us on the Instagram. We're going crazy on Instagram every day, almost putting something up. Or, you know, your podcast zone, like us, give us a comment. Like we said, we'd love to do a comment-oriented episode where you tell us that we're full of shit and we make excuses. And we do that for like a whole hour. And we can't do that without like lots of angry letters from you people. So like send us some angry shit. Like tell us that we're awful. You know, we're ready. We're putting that content out and like nobody's biting the hook, you know. So let's get busy out there and like give us some feedback and give us some likes and some shares and tell your friends if you have some friends, or make some friends and then tell them about that, or just strangers, you know, just walk up to strangers and tell them about our podcast. That works too. So without any further ado, we're going to take just a little bitty musical break, and then we'll be back and we're going to be talking about the gut biome. We're back and we're going to talk about the gut biome. So let's start with Steven. Steven, this is your idea for an episode topic. So what inspired you? Like what got you thinking? What's your first exposure to this topic?
Mostly the fact that both Juan and I have been vegans for the past 3.5 years now. And the gut biome was the main reason that drove us to that decision, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then how did you come across this information? Just from your own research, or was it recommended to you by a medical professional or a medical semi-professional? Or
you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically my story starts with like me being in Miami, being very much into just eating meat, and I didn't eat really anything else. I ate meat 3 meals a day, and I was just gaining all of this weight and wasn't really feeling that good. I never could really exercise, and even when I did, I'd put on extra mass. So I got up to a point where I was about 225 pounds.
Wow.
When my average weight was like 165.
Wow, okay.
So I decided when I moved to Portland, and I moved in with Steven, I had about 6 months of living in a nice area where I got to look at myself and think, there's got to be something inside that needs to change. I need to do some research.
Okay.
So I got into some research, and I started looking into like parasites, bacteria, all of the kind of things that could affect your body.
Okay.
I decided to try everything. I tried diatomaceous earth in the morning before I would eat. Clears out your intestinal tract, clears out all of the stuff that's down there, and then you can kind of put in all of the good stuff again.
Okay, okay.
So I would use that to kind of clear my digestion. It would clear out a lot. It would make me feel pretty good. And then I decided to look into probiotics, and I started using that, and at first it made me a little gassy down there, so it was like kind of intense. And I really
all right, so explain to us what probiotics are exactly.
They're basically beneficial bacteria that we all have inside of our bodies in some degree, but you actually take them in order to make them outnumber the bad bacteria. And the good bacteria, the probiotics, actually break down the things that you can't digest in order to get the vitamins that you need to absorb. So basically, probiotics create our food. They turn the stuff that we eat as food into actual food that we can upload for nutrition.
Okay. So the probiotics just balance. Okay, first of all, I guess that we have to explain, maybe go down into the microbiome that is the like the gut biome. They originally thought, from what I understood, that there were like eight times the microbe cells in our body compared to human cells. But now they've kind of adjusted that, and they think it's about equal, that there's equal number of not foreign bodies, because they're essential to like what we do, but like things that aren't human cells. There are equal number of cells in our bodies as there are like human cells. And so that gut biome, that part of the people, the part of the system that is these other cells that are not human cells, is kind of, they call it a biome because it has various creatures living in it, and it's a balance of those creatures that you're trying to maintain that's right for your body type. So what made you think that, well, obviously like meat has been a staple of human diet for, you know, 10,000, 50,000 years or whatever, whenever we discovered fire and started to like cook hunt in meat that we hunted on fire, and we could, you know, it was a big boon to us because we could extract more calories quicker and all of that sort of stuff. But as you say, and as I look at that, meat part of it seems to destroy or manipulate that gut biome in a way that would say that we haven't fully genetically adapted to our meat diet yet.
Well, it's because a lot of the actual nutrition is in the raw form. And you have to think, carnivores don't have to cook their meat. They have one pH stomach acid. They have a wider intestine. So the meat goes in there and it can sit and be broken down, so all of the stuff like parasites that would affect us don't.
And they would have a different set of parasites and microorganisms living in like a lion than there are in a human being. It's a different, every human creature has its own biome.
There's a map out there somewhere that you can find that actually shows all the different bacteria in the animal kingdom, and you can see where a human should be, where, you know, a lion is, or where an elephant is, and all these creatures kind of take up a different part of this map because they contain different species of these bacteria.
And they can, okay, that's so, really interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, on that map, where theoretically humans should end up is more towards that herbivore type diet.
Okay, okay. So, like, when you switched your diets, like, when you guys, like, oh, see, were you a heavy meat eater before you went vegan, or did you do the gradual? So it sounds like Juan went, like, from one to the other thing, or you did a gradual slide over 6 months.
It was actually pretty gradual for both of us.
Over a year and a half.
Okay. So you just kind of cut down, like, I eat too much meat, I still enjoy it, so I'm going to do less and less and less, and then you're like, oh, wait a second, I'm vegetarian, maybe I'll become vegan. It was like that sort of thing, or it was like, oh, I'm going to move towards vegan, and then I'm going to do these steps and get there, or that sort of thing. Or I mean, I've never made that transition. So I'm just wondering, like, what the mental process is for, like, making that. Because that's a huge deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is changing up a whole. Food is huge in my life. And I don't even eat that much food or worry about it as much as, like, a lot of people that I know, which are borderline obsessed with what they put in their body. Even if they don't eat well, they're obsessed with it. I mean, they're, you know, the people that, like, they finish lunch and the next thing they're talking about, they talk about at lunch what they're going to eat for dinner. I mean, like, I'm related to those people. and they don't eat well, but I mean, they're thinking about it all the time, you know. And that's a huge piece to move from, you know, having that average American or that easily accessible American diet to this vegan diet, which, I mean, in Portland it's way easier, but like anywhere else, even outside of Portland a little bit, it becomes really difficult commitment.
Well, so, I mean, it started out like, well, first of all, that old diet of meat and tasty foods, like, you know, breaded foods, that's all like mouth pleasure. But once I would eat it and start to digest it, I was noticing that when I would exercise, I didn't feel as good. So I would just start adding like superfoods defined as it takes less energy to break it down than you get actually from it. So you have a net positive energy uptake. So okay. You start adding superfoods and just a low amount and you'd run, and I'd noticed that I'd had a lot more energy and I felt better when I ate it. And Steven was already vegetarian and he liked to cook. So he would
actually, I was a pescatarian at the time.
Pescatarian.
That's right,
okay.
We ate fish. So I was still eating red meat, but he liked to do the cooking for us. So he subtly kind of started to change in my diet of adding more veggies because he cooked for everything.
Okay.
And as I started doing that, I noticed I was feeling a lot better from the veggies. Then I added probiotics. Probiotics was an immediate thing for me because once I maintained and got past the 5 days of gas, I noticed I was just losing weight. I was losing weight, and I just kept losing weight. And as long as I kept eating the good foods that Steven was making for us, I kept losing weight. So in 6 months, I went from 225 to 70 pounds.
170.
Sorry, yeah, 170.
Okay,
sorry.
I was like, that's not healthy, Juan.
Yeah, no kidding.
Juan, slow down.
Then from 170 to 150 was just an extra, like, running and then adding more raw veggies and, like, just eating salads. And I got to 150 pounds at
wow.
one point. So that was a
okay.
75, you know, pound reduction.
Right.
And I wasn't ever able to do that from exercise alone for my whole life. Never.
Right, right.
And then I just changed my diet, added some probiotics, and I noticed the probiotics were basically causing me to tell my body, this is what food is and this is what food isn't. So I was just kind of pushing out the stuff in me that my body knew was just waste. And then whenever I would take in things that I really didn't like, my body would say, you don't feel good. Don't eat that again.
Okay.
And so
okay.
I started to listen to my body. Mm-hmm. And then the probiotics mm-hmm. in turn were training my body to take in the foods that made me feel good rather than taste good.
Or maybe it was the first time that you actually felt good. You know what I'm saying? Like you,
yeah.
that the probiotics made you feel, oh, this is what feeling right. You know, like this is what digesting food should feel like.
Exactly. Digesting
you know?
Food.
And it stopped being difficult for a while. Then you went back to being normal. You're like, oh, wait, this is difficult.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Okay. I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another thing is your desire for these foods really can change over time. And especially when you do it gradually. I really think gradual is actually the way to go when changing your diet. I think you're more likely to have a permanent effect that way. Another thing I wanted to point out is meat, as bad as it is, probably not even as bad as processed sugar.
Right.
You know?
Well, I heard in my research that some of the dangerous organisms that can take hold in your gut biome crave sugar. So a lot of these people that you see that are just addicted to sugar and addicted to processed foods, it's not even them that are craving that stuff. It's like the beings that are living inside of them.
Yeah, There's this thing called the vagus nerve that connects your stomach and your brain. And they're finding out that this is actually capable of manipulating. It's a two-way street. Your brain can make your gut biome change, and your gut biome can make your thoughts change into what you're craving and what you want to eat.
So that's the EMS. That's the connecting nerve from, because you have, essentially we all have two nervous systems. We have like the main nervous system, and then we have the EMS, which is our digestive nervous system. And it's really only connected to our brain through, what was the nerve that
vagus
you said again?
Nerve.
Oh,
vagus
the vagus nerve,
nerve.
Yeah.
Vagus nerve, yes. So okay, I see like this is that's pretty cool. Like, and I know that there's lots of like fecal transfers that they've done in mice to show that they can create like healthy biomes in mice, or they can make unhealthy biomes, and that's starting to kind of transfer over into human science.
Yeah, I want to explain that a little more because that's something I meant to bring up actually. For the listeners who don't know, what they actually did is transplant human fecal matter into mice, and they took two different diets, the Western European diet and a sub-Saharan African diet, which was, you know, more like what our ancestors typically ate. So these Africans are still eating that way. And the European diet, the mouse with that fecal matter became obese. And these mice were being fed the same diet. So the mouse with the fecal matter from the human fecal matter, which is just blows my mind that they transplanted human uh-huh. fecal matter into mice. But anyways, the human fecal matter from the sub-Saharan African diet mouse didn't become obese. And these, like, again, these mice were eating the same diet. So that really says
amazing.
A lot. Yeah.
That's amazing. And then they also have done, from what I've looked at, they've done transfers that have affected, like you say, the behavior, where they'll have like mice that are raised in, like, where they do a C-section on the mother and they bring them out and they're completely bacteria free, and they put them in a back enclosing that is completely bacteria free, and they're raised up to have like these clean systems, as clean as possible, and they exhibit this very nervousness. Like if you reach down and you try to pick them up, they try to get away, and they're just kind of stressed out all the time. And then when they take mice that are in that healthy biome, or they're like, or mice that are pretty adventurous and like go crawl all over you and they're social or whatever, and they'll do that transfer into this bacteria free mouse, within a few days of having that bacteria change, the mouse that was skittish and everything changes to the point where it becomes easy to hold, it chills out, it's just kind of a mellow mouse again, like it doesn't have that anxiety. So my, I guess that, like, you know, since Spencer's not here for the conspiracy aspect of it, if they're moving this into human beings, like my thought is, like, I guess, and I write a little science fiction too, but like, what's to stop them to, like, you know, you've been in the military, Juan, they go through like basic training and they're like, okay, this guy is that killer instinct that we're looking for, this guy is, and these guys all have something, you know, these guys are all a little skittish or a little bit standoffish. So, and you know, they don't have to do an actual fecal matter transfer. You know, they're getting to the point that they can pull those creatures out of that fecal transfer, and it, look, you know, it's just like a shot or whatever, you know, into your digestive system or into your stomach. And what's to stop, or what's to say that they're not already starting to do this in some situations where they start to manipulate personality through gut biome transfer of microbes?
Well, let me give you a little conspiracy. It's a slightly off the subject, but still on it. So there was a rumor when I was in boot camp in the Navy. This is going to get a little personal. So all of the guys would talk about how, you know, when you're 18 to 22, you're very horny.
Right.
Lots of blood flow.
Yeah.
And so we're all used to that blood flow. And a lot of guys would talk about how when we got to boot camp, the blood flow was significantly reduced.
Oh, saltpeter.
For a long time. And yeah, you could kind of think, oh, it's because we're all around each other. But no, we started thinking it was the food.
Oh, yeah.
And that they were putting something in the food to lower our sex drive and to keep us more docile and pliant, in which case we were a lot more docile and pliant.
Yeah.
And so after we got out of boot camp, we noticed that the blood flow became back to, you know, a normal level within like a week or two of leaving boot camp. So I wouldn't be surprised if they would manipulate the gut biome if they thought it bothered to educate themselves, because, you know, the military doesn't really like to read.
Right.
It's like things being told that this is the way to do things.
But I think that it's been proven that at least in the 60s, they would put saltpeter into like the food. And,
Is that what it's called, saltpeter?
Saltpeter.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think saltpeter. They're still doing it.
Yeah, I think they are too. It kind of makes sense. You know, like I would, you know, if you bring a bunch of people that have just joined the Marines and you put them all on a big island together, like you want those guys to kind of remain calm. You know, that makes, you know, just kind of some sense.
Yeah.
All right, if I might want to change topics a little bit on us here. So, yeah, another thing I wanted to bring up is the difference between prebiotics and probiotics. And do you guys understand that, right?
Well, no, I have that written down, and I'm a little bit sketchy on what the difference is there.
Okay, so as far as – I haven't actually refreshed myself lately, but as far as my understanding goes, prebiotics are foods that probiotics eat. So you know, prebiotics, chocolate I know is one, I think bananas are one, there's several other, you know, just good healthy foods, and these
indigestible fibers.
Yeah, these are indigestible fibers.
And would that include like all of the correctly fermented foods too? Is that one of those prebiotics, or is that
fermented foods are actually the probiotics, because they're actually ready to break down the food. The prebiotics are actually indigestible fibers that they turn into food. So they use it for food, and then when they eat the food, they excrete the nutrients and the vitamins that we take in as food and nutrition.
So give me some examples of that, Stephen. What do you think
of more?
What would you eat for like prebiotics?
Like I said, chocolate is one of them. I know that bananas are another one.
Hemp seeds. Chia seeds.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of those.
Like raw veggies probably have a lot of that sort of thing. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Anything with high fiber, you know, that's the thing. You can't actually digest the fiber yourself. You have to have your gut bacteria do it for you. And these are the good bacteria that are doing that. Mm-hmm. That's the fermentation process. And it's all happening in your colon.
Now, what seems kind of weird to me, and this might be even more off topic, we're just jumping around, but what seems weird to me is I think that there are certain, there's wild variation in what the right gut biome for the right person is.
Yeah.
You know, for example, like an Eskimo, you know, like if they were to go to a vegan diet, they would have some problems because they're used to eating, meat. I mean, primarily like for generations, thousands of years, they have existed off, you know.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of people think that it could be every person has their own requirements for
that's
but really the more diversity you have, the better off you are health-wise. And the way to get that diversity is by eating very high fiber foods, meaning a lot of fruits and veggies.
Uh-huh.
Different types of fibrous foods, yeah. Not just one type.
Really, if you have like a rainbow color in your dish every day, that's a good thing. Okay. All those colors actually translate to different species of different bacteria. So,
and I think that that's diversity. I think that's a great instinct. Like they say, like eating lots of different stuff is just generally super healthy for you, unless maybe you do come from one of those cultures that is, you know, for generations and generations you've existed on one thing, and then maybe you need to judge that. I think that also works against us. This isn't a gut biome thing, but like we are trained to desire the different and the exotic foods. I mean, we're just like that's a healthy survival mechanism when we're in that pre-civilization period, pre-Iron Age or whatever. If we found something that was a different kind of fruit or berry that looked delicious and tasted delicious, like we were told, like, eat that. That's got different nutrients that you might need. But now when you walk into 7-Eleven, everything is all these wild colors and everything is all different and all these different tastes and like unnatural. I mean, we are trained and genetically motivated to want to eat these weird, awful tasting things because like in nature, that would be something that like, oh, well, this honey that comes out of this weird thing hanging in a tree with all these angry insects trying to kill me is actually super good for me. But that doesn't make any sort of logical sense in the same way that like, oh, well, we take this piece of sugar and we dip it into this different colored bunch of sugar. And then we lick that sugar off and then we dip it again. That doesn't make any sense either, you know, but no. The same instinctual thing is leading us to do like the fun dip and bee honey, you know, like it's kind of like we're working against each other in this new culture. And that's a super interesting. I'm not really how that fits into the whole thing, but I feel like our gut biome, especially with like the sugar and all those like the bacteria that feed off of that, like that's always kind of been with us and they've always been kind of our friend. But now they're kind of these overweight, overfed, belligerent, you know, like that part of our gut biome is turning into like the generalized American populace of our body, you know, and they're like demanding all more crap TV and more junk food, you know. We have like, we're like microcosms of the world in this weird way, you know.
Yeah, it's been a relatively short time since we've really had this modern diet, which has only gotten worse, you know, as far as how processed it is.
When would you say that started, like the 50s, 40s, post-World War II?
It's when we transitioned from fat to sugar to make our food taste good.
Exactly. Okay. Because I remember like in the 70s, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I remember that was like the beginning of the diet sensations. I mean, everybody was always dieting, of course, before that. But that's when they started to single different things out. Like in the 60s, like when my mom dieted, it was like, well, you just eat less food and you exercise and you just eat less food, you know,
definitely.
You increase your activity. And then it would be like in the 70s, like, oh, well, we don't want sugar or we don't want fat or we don't want, you know. And then it got into all, you know, obviously all these different diets, you know, the low carb and the high, and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's got to have huge effects on your gut biome. If you are cutting one thing out and adding another thing, like that's going to change your populace, you know. Right. I mean, in your body for sure.
Yeah. Another thing that Juan and I haven't done for about 3.5 years, the same time we became vegans, we stopped drinking. And I know you don't drink either, Craig, which is a good thing, obviously, because that's not helpful for those little guys. And antibiotics, of course, as you can imagine, we all know that these are overprescribed these days. And, you know, obviously that's not helping these gut bacteria. And then, of course, the meat industry is pumping their animals full of antibiotics, which is making it into us, too. through the meat.
And to be clear, like, they're not targeting, like, the helpful bacteria in our systems when they're giving them those antibiotics. They're trying to prevent disease and different things. But they're blanket antibiotics, and they attack a whole bunch of other stuff other than just the thing that they're going after.
Right, and if you're, have a serious infection, then that, by all means, you should take antibiotics. But, of course, like I said, they're overprescribed, and that's a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that they're even starting to work on antibiotics that are more finely targeted.
Because as of now, they're indiscriminately target all the bacteria. Right. You don't want to kill off the good ones, of course.
Right.
And that, so basically broad spectrum antibiotics, which they use the meat, you put it in there, you eat the meat, and it just kills all of your bacteria. However, your body has 2 pH in your stomach, so it's not strong enough to really break down the meat exactly. So now all of the bad bacteria that's pretty much going to come from your mouth, because it's right in your mouth first. It goes down your throat with the meat. So a lot of that stuff starts to proliferate faster than your good bacteria because it can't eat the meat. Unless it's got some veggies or any digestible fibers.
Right, you're not getting any nutrients out of that.
You're not getting any nutrients out of it. So now you just basically brought something that pretty much bombed your gut microbiome and then added all of the enemy troops to it.
So is that the same reason that a lot of people get various diseases when they're in the hospital, because they get like these huge doses of antibiotics, and then like the bad bacteria that's in the hospital gets in, and there's room to grow? Because like when you have a healthy biome, there's no room for anybody to come. There's no room for the bad stuff to come in, because all those resources are accounted for the healthy stuff.
Yep, it's so ridiculous and frustrating how bad the food is in hospitals. I think it should be a way higher standard.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't think it's out of the realm of, I don't think it's too crazy to say that meat should come with a warning label that cigarettes have, something similar to that, because it is a level one carcinogen.
I mean, one thing to consider is if people started seeing food as medicine, food as a source of fuel and energy, rather than food as, something that tastes good and something that fills my belly.
Yeah.
For instance, I worked with someone in a restaurant, and she's like, well, what are you going to eat? And I was like, I got all of this stuff. It's going to give me a lot of energy. And she's just like, I just eat to get full. And that attitude in America, I just eat to get full, is why people, they eat just whatever they can. And it doesn't really get them full. It just makes them feel satisfied because they filled their belly. But your brain is tricky. Your brain doesn't know how to tell you, hey, I need these complex vitamins and minerals. I need this ratio of fats, carbohydrates, and protein. All it can tell you is, I'm hungry. Growl, growl, growl. So when it tells you it's hungry and you don't give it the right thing, it feels full temporarily. Then it's like, wait, I'm still hungry. I don't have what I need.
Well, I think that I would add something else to that. I mean, it's not only that nutritional craving that the brain's telling you. Food does other stuff to us, too, on this emotional lymphatic system, where it hits our brain and it accesses these pleasure centers. And there is something to be said. Like, there's the old adage, like, if you're stressed out, like, chew some gum, because like it triggers a part in your brain. All animals, when they're eating, they only eat when they're safe. And if you're chewing, it triggers endorphin release in your brain that says, it's safe and you're fine and you're temporarily out of danger, and it'll calm you down.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people eat for those reasons. I mean, our contemporary culture has so many seriously sad, not faulty wired, but their wires are reversed and they're going in the wrong directions to get the thing that's going to make them feel better. And I think that a big old plate of nachos does something for them emotionally that they're not going to say like, nachos make me happy. No one's going to say that, because that's an embarrassing thing to say. But on a level, that gives you that temporary, it's like having a drink or like anything for these folks. It's like a temporary stab to their life sadness.
That's true, and I would advise anyone who feels that way about food to consider maybe some raw chocolate and honey. You'll get some nutrition from the honey. You'll get serotonin from the chocolate. And if you use probiotics with the chocolate, it'll break down the indigestible parts of the chocolate, and it's anti-inflammatory and get rid of your headaches.
Right.
So now you're actually eating for pleasure and for medicine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, eating a healthy diet by no means means sacrificing pleasure. Your desire changes over time. That's what happens. You as your bacteria makeup changes, you crave different things.
I get that, but it's a hard sell. I mean, I eat really healthily. I mean, I eat like salad. I eat very little meat. I eat very few calories. But like when Juan says, like, have some honey and some chocolate, and And I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? You know, like, I want that shit, you know? Like, I want a fucking piece of cake, you know what I'm saying? Like, and like, that's, I mean, and I realized, okay, that's a reasonable, like, there's a part of my brain going, okay, this is a reasonable person telling me a reasonable thing that will probably work, but like, the reptilian brain is going like, yeah, fuck that, you know, like, that ain't gonna happen, you know, like, seriously, it's gonna be 1 o'clock in the morning and you're gonna want fucking some M&Ms, you know, and you're gonna like walk to the store to get some M&Ms because your stoned ass isn't gonna be talking logic at that point, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's the huge, like, it's hard, you know, that's and a this, hard deal.
I don't advocate gradualism when it comes to politics. However, I do when it comes to the diet, you know, and this is why, you know, I think that's the real way to tricking yourself into making it last.
Yeah.
One thing I picked up
from you guys is like, it's not about, and I've learned this too. I mean, like, and for me to say that too, like, I damn near almost died from like bad health. Like, diet is so important to like me being like a healthy, happy individual. Like, I've got like all this motivation to make that thing, and I still have that voice that's like, yeah, no, you know, that's just crazy talk, you know, that's unreasonable. But I think what you guys are saying is like, it's not about, and I think this is a huge thing about everything, is like, it's not about taking stuff away, it's about adding the good stuff, you know, and then like enjoying the good stuff, and soon you're not going to want the shit that, like Juan said,
exactly,
it makes me feel bad, so I stop doing it, you know, you realize that that makes my stomach hurt, and no one likes a stomach ache, you know what I'm saying? But you got to make that connection in your brain,
and you know, don't cold turkey it all at once either, you know, just gradually, you know, wean it down.
Yeah,
it's, for me, it's like addition and subtraction, or, you know, substitutions. You start adding things to what you're already eating, and when you do that, you either have to eat more food or subtract something. So if you add nice things, you just start subtracting the worst things that you're eating. Just get rid of it. And as you keep adding nicer things that you enjoy, become creative with your food, you're just going to get rid of more of the bad stuff till eventually there's nothing left. I have to tell you, one thing that makes people really eat poorly is alcohol, because you have two things happening. One, the alcohol is basically clean sweeping your gut biome, so all of the bacteria is going to die. And then the sugar in the alcohol is going to feed the bad bacteria that just came down your throat from your mouth. So now your mouth is actually colonizing your stomach and your intestine when it's not supposed to colonize and proliferate too much, because everything's supposed to be in balance, basically.
So I know a lot of people, like, the only time that they crave sugar is when they are drinking. You know, even the most stringent.
Yeah, well, it is fermented sugar, so, you know.
Do you think that it changes it that quick, that that gives you that craving within a few hours?
Absolutely. In 24 hours, your gut biome can actually be completely changed. That's why when you start a good diet and you add probiotics, within 24 hours, you'll see a response. So as an example, if you're craving sugar and you actually are hungry and you know you're hungry, get some raw garlic, crush it, let it sit for 10 minutes so the antibiotic in it will actually activate, and then eat that with your food, and your sugar craving will actually go down. Then you just find something else to eat, or maybe eat like a banana or a fruit, and then that'll kind of satisfy you.
Yeah, and technically we're not vegans because of the fact that we eat honey, and that's kind of the only sugar we do eat, you know,
because
it is nutritious, it's a food. You know, there is, you know, moral reasons to not want to do it with the bees and everything, but yeah, especially when it comes to Manuka honey, that stuff is really amazing.
Yeah.
But I believe in honey. A lot of vegans don't, you know, they wouldn't even call me a vegan, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess I have one friend that does not do honey anymore because of the, and then they also don't do the wine that's made with the spider silk or whatever too, which was a big thing for them too.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, like, that whole, like, that can get a little bit too...
Yeah, you
got to
find really what works for you, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to make yourself suffer. And you shouldn't have to doing this, you know.
I mean, as long as everyone remembers, there's no book. You kind of have to let your conscience and your stomach be your guide and have an idea of what do you want your food to do. Like, is your food just to give you pleasure, or is it actually give you energy? Is it supposed to keep you going throughout the day?
Yeah.
You know, once you decide what's the objective of my food and when I eat it, then you're going to get the food that's going to fulfill that objective.
They have actually been able to link the meat-eating diet to a lot of different diseases via your gut bacteria. You know, the bad bacteria can be linked to heart disease, what are some other ones? I forget.
Oh, high blood pressure.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say that the diabetes is definitely affected by the by.
I know you always. I mean, like, yeah, I always thought it had so much to do with sugar. I never realized that the meat could affect it too. You know.
Yeah, yeah, but I guess if your gut biome is not correct, you're breaking down that meat and turning it into sugar. I mean, you can turn everything into sugar if your gut biome is that's what it's craving, and you know, I mean, that's you're gonna get a system that's gonna be what it is. You know, I mean, so that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a second brain, kind of, you know, in a sense, your stomach is.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that fungus that gets inside of ants, gets them to climb to the highest tree.
Yeah.
And it grows out in order to shoot its spores, and it gets, like, the best coverage. That's kind of like what your body does whenever you eat the wrong food. It's like that bacteria uses your vagus nerve, tells your brain, hey, I not only need food, I need specific types of food. Yeah. So whenever you see that food, you're going to be really happy. I'm going to give you some serotonin. You're ready to go. And you see that sugar, eat it. That's going to make you feel good. You're going to love it. And if you don't get it, you're mad. You're angry. Now you're upset at people. You notice that when people don't get their sugar, they start snapping and start getting upset. But then you get them without that sugar and something nutritious, within a day or two, they start to calm down a little bit. They become less anxious.
Now, there is another microbe or a fungi or something that gets into I don't know if it's ants or it's some sort of insect that it gets into it and it does the same thing, but really what it likes is it likes to be in birds, and so it infects the insect, climbs to the top leaf, so it's easy for that insect to get eaten by a bird, and then the microbe is where it wants to be because it gets transferred by the worm. That's amazing that the microbe takes control of, and kind of an indication, like you were saying, like how much control this second system has over us. And the mysterious thing about it is, like, nobody really knows how it does that, because for years the reason why we've ignored this is not because we didn't know that all of these microbes and stuff were living in us, but we had this thing called the blood-brain barrier that they felt like, oh, there's no way that a microbe can get into the brain, so there's no way that can affect the way that we think or anything. So they just kind of, like, they didn't look at that, like psychologists and brain scientists and all this, just assumed that didn't happen.
I don't think this vagus nerve has actually been known about for very long either. I'd have to look it up, but I think it's a relatively new discovery.
Okay.
Well, plus the arrogance of medical science, Western medicine, they don't accept that, like, your food and your stomach can have so much control over something like the almighty brain, the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what if the stomach is partly the central nervous system?
Well, they show that. I mean, 80% of your serotonin is made in your gut. You know, that's for sure. You know, and the 20% is made in your brain. So, like, if your gut's not producing serotonin in a healthy way, like, you are going to be a depressed, anxious individual.
Yeah, and
that's
whenever,
for sure.
Yeah, whenever I'm feeling down or whatever, you know, it's gotten to the point where I think about what have I eaten in the past 24 hours that might have made me feel this way, you know? And I didn't used to have that thought.
That's interesting, yeah. I still don't. I'm not quite there. But, like, I do, like, I'm kind of starting to, like, well, definitely, like, putting that, like, how I feel with what I eat. You know, like, for a while there, like, salt affected me so bad that if I were to go and have, like, I don't know, even, like, a little snack-sized thing of chips, like, the next day I would gain, like, 3 or 4 pounds of water weight or whatever. I drank water, I would just retain all of it because my system was not passing any of that salt out. So I did learn, like, that was a forced thing to, like, okay, ate that, how does it make me feel later on, you know? And I guess I am starting to, like, expand that into more different kinds of food, and I think that's one reason why I do eat so much less meat and different kinds of meat when I do eat meat. You know, red meat, I mean, I haven't touched it for, I can't even think the last time I had red meat, you know? I mean, like, so, I mean, that's, I think that's part of, like, maybe the change,
yeah,
too.
Just, you know.
Yeah, listening to your body.
Adding as much prebiotics as you can, the fibers, veggies, the chocolate, anything with a lot of fiber that's good food for the good bacteria. Then, you know, also, I forgot my second thought. Had this, you know, little edible before we came here, and it's doing its work now.
It's not the first time that's happened on this show, that's for sure.
Well, one thing to remember is, like, people tend to treat food like a drug, and you got to think about it like this. When people take a drug, they're taking it to get messed up. And they're like, okay, here are the plus and minus category. I'm going to get messed up, I'm going to feel good, but there's going to be consequences. I'm going to be hungover. I won't feel good the next day, but that's okay. I don't mind. And then people realize, like, when they get that big pint of ice cream or they eat that half bag of cookies or full bag of cookies, they know this is not good for me. This is not food, but I know that this drug is going to make me feel good right now, and I'll suffer the consequences later.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where, you know, people need to transfer their drug to something else. Make a different item your drug, because your body's your castle, and, you know, the food can be considered a Trojan horse that could actually bring down your entire castle, slowly or quickly.
And you know what I was thinking as you were saying that is, like, I think that maybe the issue is like, unlike alcohol or cocaine or even marijuana or something like that, where it's like an occasional high, and then you, because you do listen to your body when you drink, like, you know, because you have a headache the next morning, man, you know. I mean, your body's shouting at you because you're really poisoning it with alcohol. But, like, you've been sick for so long on the food that you've been eating. Like you said earlier, like, until I ate well for a couple weeks and realized, oh, wait a second, you know, I haven't been feeling well for a long time because of my diet. Like, that's the thing, is like, food doesn't register that way because you always feel like crap because you have, I think, half a thing of ice cream every night.
Yep.
You know, so every morning you wake up with that ice cream sugar drop or whatever it does to you that next day, which it absolutely does something to you the next day. But you don't notice it because that's how you feel. That's just morning.
Yeah.
That's just morning.
Sugar definitely is a drug, like, by any measure I can come up with. And I think it's a pretty bad one, you know, especially processed sugar.
Yeah, processed is like, you know, this refined cocaine. I mean, it's like chewing
cocoa. It affects the same dopamine receptors as cocaine, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it's worse than a lot of drugs because it affects your dopamine receptors like cocaine. It's not actually food, but it pretends to be food. And if you forget that it's actually not food and you treat it like food, you'll actually start to waste away. And that's the worst thing that it does to you.
And the best thing you can do to combat that is probiotics like kimchi, sauerkraut, pickles, olives, you know, anything like that. Anything fermented, really.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. I mean, what do you guys think that, like, fasting does to your gut biome?
Oh, it resets everything. Yeah. There's a lot
of... Really? You think that it resets 100%. It doesn't kill things off?
No. In fact, fasting is actually approved by Western and Eastern medicine. They all believe in it. You basically... Fasting forces your body to go into starvation mode. And when it does that, and if you make it makes you feel kind of sick, so you don't really enjoy it. But you start to just attack everything. You're going to eat all of your cells, and the weakest cells go down first. And the weakest ones are the ones that are usually prone to infection. The strongest ones will last longer, and then when you bring food back into your body, usually hopefully healthier foods, you're just going to feed the good bacteria faster than the bad bacteria.
Because
they're the ones that are stronger.
Yeah, there's trillions of these bacteria living there and hundreds of thousands of species, you know. More bacteria in your stomach than
do you guys know, like, like, what I guess the time window is much faster, I guess, than what I imagine. You know, I always feel like those changes should take weeks, but I guess that they take more like hours, you know.
Definitely hours.
Because I do like a lot of intermittent fasting, which is like a 14 to 16 hour break from anything but like water or like a tea. You know, sometimes I'll do tea, like a green tea or a black tea or something, but no sugar or anything like that. Just pretty much water or fluids for like 16 hours, and then I'll have like a reasonably... And I can tell when I'm doing that like two or three times a week that it does change like my digestive health in a huge way. I don't really know if it changes my mood that much, but my body sort of gets used to doing that long thing, and I don't get like the crankiness, and I don't get like the lack of energy even. Like, because sometimes when you're doing like a 14 hour, about hour 7 or 8, you really feel like, oh my God, I could use something. But I don't get that if I'm doing that like three or four times a week, giving yourself like 1 or 2 days of like regular eating and then one day of that intermittent fasting. And I'm wondering if that's part of it, just like I'm killing off enough of the bad stuff from those 2 days of eating. I don't eat like crap, but there's a few crappy things in there for sure. You know, I'm just killing that off in that 14 hours and kind of resetting it on those weeks, you
Definitely.
Know? Huh. Huh.
Yeah.
So people, like, this is a really awesome thing in the sense that, like, if you want to lose weight or you want to, like, get more energy or any of this stuff, this is
live
like
longer.
This is a quick fix. I mean, quick.
Definitely. But then it's also, you know, if you fall off that wagon, it's also a quick...
Right.
Well, reversal. In a sense, so it's a quick fix as long as you're willing to eat the proper foods with probiotics. If you eat crappy food with probiotics, then you're going to create a tug-of-war situation, and the probiotics will lose because they're more expensive than sugar. you'll probably stop taking them first, and you're still used to the sugar, so that's going to win.
And I think our prehistoric ancestors, obviously, were eating meat, you know. They go back far enough, and it was probably just primates eating primates eating insects and fruit and stuff.
Sure.
But, yeah, at one point we were eating meat, but I don't think we were eating it very often, you know. It would be so difficult to get it and stuff, and I think we
would kind of ration it out. Chimpanzees do hunt for meat.
Occasionally,
you know, maybe once every few weeks if they feel like they can grab get something, they
yeah,
will
primates
do
primates go across the spectrum as far as carnivore to herbivore, for sure.
And I think that, you know, and that's another thing that I've always kind of had, like, questions about as far as that vegan piece is, like, because I know that how evolution, or at least how evolution has been explained to me, is like that meat eating diet allowed us to grow our large brains, in the sense that that gave us that boost of calories that we weren't getting as just a pure not even an omnivore, like before, when we were just eating like vegetables and fruits and nuts and all that sort of stuff. That meat gave us that extra cushion. At least that's how it's explained, you know?
Yeah, I'm starting to think that's propaganda, and here's why.
Okay.
When I first started to go on this vegan journey, basically, I went to the doctor all the time. I was definitely sick. My weight gain was causing my asthma to be worse. There's just all these different issues. So one of the things I did is I told them that I had a vegan diet, and they put it in my medical chart like it's, you know, a red flag to watch out for it. But every time I would take a blood test, I'd have a few things off here and there, usually B12 or vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
But my protein was always perfect. I never had to worry about taking protein.
Okay.
And when I asked them about that, they never really had an answer. But the fact was, I got all the protein I needed just from veggies.
Just from veggies.
Yeah, so just the things you would have to worry about if you're actually thinking about becoming a vegan would be iron, B12, what else am I missing? Vitamin D, yeah,
D3.
And D3. And to source, you can source the D3 from mushrooms, I believe. So you can actually get that from a non-vegan source. And the B12, you can get it from spirulina, which is also a vegan source. So, and chocolate's a good source of iron.
But the main thing that I just realized, my conclusion, is that when people talk about how you have to worry about protein being a vegan, that's actually a really big lie. It was the one thing I did not have to worry about.
That's precisely what I was getting at. And I have a pretty good piece of evidence why that could be true. The out of all the mammals on Earth, the human beings have the least amount of protein in their breast milk, which, you know, if you think about that, breast milk's going to be evolution's perfect recipe for nutrients for the infant that's been getting evolved for millions of years. And, you know, this perfect recipe has the least amount of protein of any mammal on Earth in humans. So this whole propaganda that humans need protein, I've been a vegan for a long time. I've never had protein as an issue for me. You know, I've had to worry about all these other things, but that's, I think, kind of like, I can't think of a good equivalent right now, but I'm sure that, you know, they've used other similar tactics in the past with propaganda.
I mean, the fact is animals have done more for us alive, helping us with the land and crops and agriculture, than they do being food on a plate, you know. And as far as like the necessary, you know, heat and time to cook an animal, you actually cook most of the nutrition away. So a lot of the protein that you're taking into your body is actually weak protein. It's pretty much been broken down. It's not as strong as point, which you are what you eat. So if you're eating weak protein, you're not really getting the same kind of muscle density. It's funny that people...
I always understood that heat, like, that was one of the huge things for the human diet, is the fact that we could cook food. That was huge. And the fact that even for vegetables and things, like, we break down that fibrous content, and then when we eat it, we would get more nutrition per bite because we'd already started that breakdown process, and then our stomachs didn't have to work as hard to get, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you're probably better off getting those omegas from like nuts and stuff like that,
or fermentation. So fermentation does exactly what heat does without destroying your nutrition, and in fact it transforms some things into other things. For instance, soy is full of all kinds of toxins from the different Roundup and fertilizers we use on soy crops, because they're highly vulnerable to pests. So when you ferment soy into something like tempeh or miso or soy sauce, you're actually, the fermentation process squeezes out all of that stuff, all of the bad stuff, and you don't actually reabsorb
it. But don't you think that you would get more nutrients if you took, like roasted chestnuts, you get more nutrients out of them bite per bite than you do just regular chestnuts?
It really depends, yeah. Certain foods, you know,
like the heat does release more.
Being some cooked. Foods. So, yeah, some foods, the heat will activate more nutrients, and some foods are better off being eaten raw.
Okay, okay.
And, you know, there's also things like the fact that kale has something that a chemical in it that can only be activated when you chew it, you know. So if you juice kale, you miss out on that.
Yeah, but as much as you get from heat, again, I would argue that fermentation would give you more than heat because there's no destruction, there's just transformation, and it's a slow breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
But yeah, some things are not, like, you don't want to ferment some things.
No,
you know what I'm saying? Like, that, you just don't want to eat that.
Fermentated food smells gross.
Yeah. Well, you gotta be careful. Some of it's delicious, but you gotta be careful.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It just smells bad. It smells really bad.
Yeah. Kimchi's a good example of that.
Yeah. Kimchi's delicious, though. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Awesome. All right. So, I think that we're kind of getting towards the end of
wrapping
it.
I'm
feeling pretty good. I mean, do you guys like have any more that you want to say or anything?
I don't know. I think we covered it.
Yeah, kind of covered it. Like, I think that, you know, I mean, I'm not going to become vegan. I mean, like, I appreciate that, but I mean, you guys didn't convince me, so we're going to have you back again. But, I think that it's interesting, though. I mean, I think that the main thing, like, whether you become vegan or anything, like, the main takeaway is, like, listen to your body. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got a lot going on, and if you just are quiet for a minute and listen to, like, what your body's telling you, like, it's like the old joke, like, you go to the doctor and you're like, oh, doc, it hurts when I move my arm like that. And the doctor says, well, don't move your arm like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of is like, that is really a simple and stupid joke, but, like, I don't feel good when I eat a half a box of Captain Crunch. Well, don't eat half a box of Captain Crunch. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to probiotic your way out of that. Like, just don't eat that crap. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, just take a minute. You know, and I think that that's huge. And I think that if you do take a minute, like, maybe not for me, but I think more reasonable people out there, and they think about it and they listen to you guys, they might move towards that the veganism. You know, like, I'm kind of hopeless maybe over here.
I keep wanting to pound in to anybody who actually is considering that. The gradualism can be a big friend, you know, it can be on your side. I think it's a
and every
tool.
Step and every step forward, even if you never make it, like if you take two or three steps towards that,
exactly,
and you're like, I'm gonna eat a hamburger like every 3 days or rather than two a day, you know, that's huge. That alone is huge. You may have still kind of a crappy gut biome, but man, you are ingesting a lot less garbage, you know, so like it's better, you know, like that's a positive step, and every positive step you make is a positive step, you know?
Yeah, if you're going to have a hamburger and fries, just replace the fries with a salad, and I think that's a nice step.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that either.
What about, maybe some purple potatoes or some
maybe
sweet
some, like,
potatoes
onion rings, like a bunch of onion rings in there, some fried zucchini maybe.
Or you can fry everything in, you know, coconut oil instead of
canola. As long as it tastes the same, I'm fine with it. You can fry it whatever you want. Put enough. No, I jest only a little on that, but yeah.
No, but another reason for becoming a vegan, at least for me, was it allowed me to cut out a lot more of the fried foods in my diet. You know, it just kind of those things go hand in hand. And I don't know.
Do you guys, like, when you, like, walk by, like, a piece of cake, you're like, that's not even food? Are you guys at that point that's just barely food?
Well, what it does is it makes us think about a vegan alternative, and then we go find it or make it.
Because you want to eat that fucking cake.
Yeah.
Right? That's what's going on. Like, seriously, like, you're not like,
it's a war.
You know, fighting it every day.
If we were to eat that cake, though, that we saw then and there, we wouldn't be satisfied. It wouldn't be the vegan cake we wanted with the coconut sugar and the, you know, gluten-free.
But that's what you want. You want the vegan cake. You don't like the. You don't really want the big piece of wedding cake.
But the overall.
Or you do, and you're like, well, you know, this is, you know, like
sugar,
honey and fucking chocolate, because this, you know, it's not, we can't have this.
The willpower is so much stronger when you get the sugar, you know, to a minimum. And
I'm just not willing to pay the price.
Yeah, you know it's going to cause a lot of problems.
And
you can't really dismiss that thought.
Think this is also true? And I know we're probably going over time here, but it doesn't matter. I want to find out. This is so. Do you think it's also true that the finer? Because I mean, I lived with this guy in college, like, and And this is the 90s, so like it wasn't like he wasn't quite, it was 90s in Wyoming, so he was doing the best that he could do to be like the healthiest dude ever. I mean, working out twice a day, like drinking his water, you know, just boiled chicken breast and vegetables and like, you know, doing everything that he could do. But man, like if that dude caught a cold, he would just be out for like 3 days, dead to the world. And like it seemed like every time, or like if he would go out drinking with us, you know, because he didn't do very much of that, man, he'd be hungover for like 4 days afterwards. So I mean, and I've always kind of like, and this was always kind of in jest, but like we just always say, like, you know, if we didn't eat, like we didn't eat, if you don't eat McDonald's and you don't like go and have like a Slurpee every once in a while and keep your immunity up to those things, you know what I'm saying, that like you're kind of like, you know what I'm saying, like you're fine-tuning your watch to the point that any yeah. little thing can throw that watch off like crazy. Do you guys find that like the more that you get into the veganism and all that and you more fine-tune your body, that little things that normally wouldn't throw you off like throw you off way more for longer periods of time?
Most definitely, yes. And I don't know that that's such a bad thing. I think it allows you to not be able to eat as much garbage as you typically would.
So you feel
would.
Like maybe like you're kind of like your gut biome is kind of Stockholming, syndroming your way into this veganism? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
That maybe like that maybe the gut biome has convinced you guys that, you know, the kimchi and all that stuff is what you really want? It's kind of it's kind of like the salt. It's kind of the sugar biome. Like they want, that makes you want to eat sugar and think that's good. But it's just the same. It's almost the same thing. It's just healthier for the human cells
yeah.
to have these guys like telling you what they want to eat.
Yes, that is what I accept.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
okay. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's almost like these. They're will like start parasites.
Yeah. And you.
Yeah. 100%. Actually, I would say symbiotes because they give
okay,
back
symbiotes,
what they get.
That's a better.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
that's a better word.
I give them what they want, and they give me a lot of energy and a good mood.
The bad ones okay. are parasites. However, the ones that you know come from eating meat and get. Give off toxins.
But you would think that the ones that want you to eat meat and all that stuff, like they want to keep you alive too, because they want the, you know, they want you to keep doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, no
yeah,
symbiote
they just don't want
wants
you
the
to be
host
healthy.
To die. I mean, they can get a little sick or whatever, but like, you know, it's kind of like those bacteria are both kind of running their own game, and they just want to eat their, they eat what they want to eat.
Well, you know, one of them I think has self-control. The one that's bad is basically greedy. It like wants something, it craves it. It's like, oh, I got more. Let's keep outnumbering. I got more. Let's just bring it.
It almost
the
behaves
good ones
more.
Are like, okay, I've got enough. You're full now. You don't need to eat till the next meal.
Okay.
In fact, on
okay.
a nicer diet, I can eat 3 meals a day, and if they're the right 3 meals, I don't really need to snack.
Yeah, okay. It almost behaves more like a virus, in fact.
Okay. So they do. They're a little bit more well-behaved as far as hosts go in there. The other ones are more of like an uncontrolled, like, they're like the party crashers sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's that roommate
okay.
that just doesn't pay rent, you know,
okay.
always wants to spend all his rent money.
That's
on
a
booze.
Good way of thinking about yeah. it. You know, it's like you have the party and you don't want the meth heads down the street to show up.
Yeah.
Invite all their friends, because like when they show up, they're gonna be like, this is a great party, I'm gonna invite a bunch of my friends and they're all gonna come here and we're gonna steal all your shit and like probably
yeah.
break some stuff too.
That, right. I like that analogy.
Okay, I think that's a great way to end it, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been another really pretty interesting episode of Idiots Discuss the Universe. I'd like to thank Steven and Juan for showing up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Peace out.
And we'll be all back really soon. We do, you know, like a new episode's coming out like crazy, so there's probably going to be one out like even before you finish listening to this one. They're coming out so rapidly now, it's like insane. But until next time, this has been Idiots Discuss the Universe. Bye-bye.
Idiots Discuss the Universe is recorded in the IDTU studios located in Portland, Oregon. All opinions and commentary has been carefully researched by the technicians and scholars of IDTU Research Academy, and therefore should be greeted with healthy skepticism and disbelief. No idiots were harmed during the making of this podcast.